Good morning and welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show. I'm Amy Otto, joined by Lee Cantor. Good morning, Lee.
Good morning, Miss Amy. How are you doing this rainy fall day?
I'm good. You know, the rain came in time yesterday. I had one of those days where I was in the office all day.
Is that good?
It was good. With the rain, I was able to get a lot done. But I'm thinking I might need some flippers and
goggles. I know.
Goggles.
It's a little wet out there.
Very wet. Very wet. We've got a great show this morning, Lee. There are very many. There's a lot of things when it comes to inventing that excite me, as you know. And we've had the Inventors Association of Georgia on the show before. And we welcome them back today. Welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show, Dave Savage, the president of the Inventors Association of Georgia.
Thank you for having us back. I understand we got some of the highest response you've ever had for our show.
A lot of hits on your show. A lot of people clicked on and listened because I think there's a lot of minds out there that have the invention that they're wanting to do something with. So tell us about the Inventors Association of Georgia, how you got involved, when did it start?
Well, there are member-led inventor groups all around the country, and they go back 30, 40 years or more. And the Atlanta, the Inventors Association of Georgia, has been on for 33 years. And for many, many years, we moved along, like many of the groups around the country, with 10 to 15, 20 people at a time. But currently, partly because of our little promotions, letting people know that we exist in the economy, we're bringing in 75 to 100 people each month to our meetings where they come to learn and get inspired and get a big dose of reality of what it takes to move their idea onto a store shelf.
How many people come back? I mean, what do people, it's like a regular thing for them, or does someone come and dabble and then get what they need and leave?
Well, you know, partly people come in with a fantasy of their idea. They've been holding it for many, many years. And they're saying, you know, at a certain point, they say, I've got to do something now. And so they have no idea about the difference between the inventing aspect and running a business behind it and all the many costs, and they have no idea about how long it takes. Mm-hmm. So with each of our speakers who represent an expertise or an experience of being an inventor themselves, we try to have the presenters give a big dose of reality of how long it takes and all the many aspects of what it takes to make it happen. And oftentimes they realize, you know what, this is beyond what they're expectations. They don't happen to have the money or the time to make what it happens, and they now appreciate that they'll have to give it to somebody else or do mm-hmm. something else with it.
Sure.
But the idea is to really help people. We don't hold their hand. So there are some inventor groups where they have regular forums where each other shares actively and they help move it along. As a member-led nonprofit group, we are there to supply information and supply connections and resources and information about where to go and how to get there. But we do not carry their backpack up the mountain, as they say.
Where do y'all meet?
We meet currently at we've been meeting there for several years, the Ryan's Buffet Grill on Jimmy Carter Boulevard, about 100 yards west of Peachtree Industrial Boulevard. So it's easy to get to by freeway. You don't have to migrate through many surface streets. And people come in as early as an hour and a half before meetings. The meetings officially start at 11, mm-hmm. but people come as early as 9:30 to get to know other people and get shared resources. And that's a very important thing. You know, one of the things that people are very concerned about, and rightly so, is the privacy and secrecy. And they say, well, how do I share my idea to get support without giving it away? Mm-hmm. And I announced at the beginning of the meeting that you should share it to our group and others as a solution. I have a better spatula. You know instantly what market they're in. So some people say, well, I have a housewares product. Well, and they're looking for support. Well, that could be anything. It could be a
sure.
clock. If they have a kitchenware, it narrows it down. But by saying I have a better spatula, it doesn't say how it's made, what's different, mm-hmm. what's unique about it. But now anybody who says, oh, I know somebody at a certain manufacturer or distributor or whatever can help you more specifically. And so that's an important way to position your product as a solution for a demographic. I've got a waistband for pregnant women that's fashionable for 35 to 45-year-olds, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so that you've targeted your market and
sure.
you propose a solution. And
what is the biggest misconception a new person at these meetings has?
That they can create a design and a prototype and then take that to a manufacturer and have it made and they'll be in business. That virtually every person who has a product has a story to tell, that they created 20, 30, and more design prototypes before they even got to the final design. And even what was manufactured was a compromise based on their expectations. People will design something in their head based on the manufacturing methods, the materials, and the processes that they're familiar with. So they design something out of metal because they think, well, plastics aren't going to be strong enough. Well, not only don't they know about the world of plastics, but they don't know about fiberglass or other kinds of materials. Mm-hmm. And when introduced to a manufacturing engineer and process engineer, then all of a sudden they realize, gee, it could be thinner, lighter, smaller, sure, and still function. And even thinking about packaging, we had a packaging expert, Joanne Hines, who came in and mentioned something that I learned about, hadn't thought about, that there are certain size cartons and packages that products can go in. And if you happen to not think about that package size and shape in advance, you may do all through the end of design and realize your product is a half an inch too big for a standard box.
Ooh, wow.
And now you have to have 5,000 of them made, a custom box, when you're only trying to produce a few hundred of your product in advance. So there's all kinds of things that will, the pits that you can fall into if you're not aware of all those things.
Wow. A lot of like-minded individuals in one room, though. What's that like? Well, I've got to go to one of the meetings, Lee. I've said that for 2 years now. I've got to go.
Well, it is. You know, in fact, we have people who aren't inventors and asked to come because they enjoy the energy. In fact, one of the outreaches I like to make through the radio program is that we invite people who perhaps have been in the R&D labs or engineering and miss the camaraderie and the creative aspect. And we would like to have their creativity and their expertise in our meetings to share with other people who are looking to get their products online down the road. And so I would love to have other people who just want to be around creative people and contribute your knowledge in a way that makes a difference to people.
Where can people learn more about the Inventors Association of Georgia?
Well, currently, you know, we have a website, but I'd like to, when they go to the website, they only get partial information. Mm-hmm. When they email me as president, I not only send them several emails. One includes all the meeting information, but I have a list of over 300 websites that are geared toward both the entrepreneur and the inventor. And I have that list of websites. That's also one for audio, and your program is on there as well, where they can learn about being a successful entrepreneur, which is a big part of this whole inventor process. Many people are the creative, but the business side is what kills them. And so they can learn how to do that as well. And I send them articles that might relate to their current industry or the level of process where they're at. They're looking to develop a prototype. I've got several great articles about prototyping from the experts. So I would wish they would email me at dave@davesavage.com, and I will send out to them all kinds of things. They don't have to be in the metro area. If somebody's listening to the radio show and is in another state, whatever, I'll still gladly send that material out to them.
This sounds expensive, Dave.
Well, time. You know, I haven't figured out how to monetize the many hours I spend, but I get to meet amazing people. I get to go to amazing places and do great things. We partner with Georgia Tech, Georgia State, and UGA and doing joint ventures, and we cross-promote by being on my email list, which I'll put you on when you email to me and send the material out. You'll get notices, and I pack in our newsletters with all kinds of great resources that are really valuable to the entrepreneur and the inventor.
How much does it cost to be a member?
A massive $35 a calendar year.
Wow.
And if you come in December as a guest, not only do you get the $10 guest admission included, but for $35 in December, you get the whole year through December. So it's a great value. And essentially, you're getting 12 hours of presentations by experts. You get up to like 40 hours of networking and connecting time, and you get the great newsletters we put out. And we do have a vendor program for those vendors who supply services for inventors and entrepreneurs. We encourage them to be part of our organization and contribute their skills and knowledge to our group, and we have a vendor member program for them to get their word out. I have over 1,200 people on my email list, and by writing articles or submitting knowledgeable bits on a regular basis, they can really get their word out about what they do to a large audience.
Wow. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you very much.
I think I'm tongue-tied.
Like, I know. Dave show.
I need to wake up. Thanks for being with us today, Dave. It's always a pleasure. We'll make sure you come back again in another 6 months to tell us the exciting things that you have going on. And the other thing is you always bring great guests with you. Our next guest this morning is Ted Heskey, and Ted Heskey is a patent agent and electrical engineer. Welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show.
Oh, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
So, Ted, that's a little bit of an unusual combination, right? Patent agent and electrical engineer?
Well, you would probably find that among the ranks of patent agents, there are more professional engineers and PhDs than you might ordinarily suspect. But, yeah, it is a combination of law and technology, and, of course, that's where patents really belong.
Can you explain the difference between a patent agent and a patent attorney?
Sure. An attorney is someone who is licensed through the state bar, and typically they have a law degree in addition to the bar licensing. And in addition to that, they've passed a federal bar exam in patent law. Patent agents, on the other hand, they practice exclusively patent law, which is federal law. So in addition to having the technical background, they also have to know the patent law, which is ascertained by the PTO, the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, by means of the exam. It's the same exam passed by attorneys. So with respect to the practice of patent law, it's really the same bar requirement.
Mm-hmm. Now, we're talking about inventions, and Dave talks about his group, and people are listening to the show right now, and they have an idea in mind. But the one thing you always hear when someone says, oh, I've got an idea, people always say, is it patented? Do you have a patent on it? How important is a patent?
Well, I frequently say to people who have various different kinds of ideas that sometimes you don't need a patent. Mm-hmm. But if you have any kind of technical content, first thing to understand is that patents, as constituted in the United States, can cover anything under the sun made by man. So it doesn't exclude a lot of things. So a patent really should be viewed as part of a strategy. Yes, there are some people who just want to have a patent because they'd like to join that club. But the best idea to assess whether or not you need a patent is whether you have a business purpose for it. And the business purposes for a patent really derive from the legal rights that you get from having a patent. If you are a patent holder, you have the right to exclude another party from making, buying, or selling a product that embodies that patent in the United mm-hmm. States. So that's the crux of it. So if that has value to you, then you should be thinking about a patent.
And what's the difference between a design and a utility patent? Because oftentimes you'll hear that someone has a design patent on something, but I just don't know the difference between those two.
Well, that's a great question, Amy. a design patent is a patent to the way something looks and feels. So if you think about some items that you see in widespread consumer use, for example, an iPod, mm-hmm. A design patent would cover specifically the way the thing looks and feels. A utility patent, on the other hand, covers how the thing works, how it does what it does, not what it looks like while it's doing it. So you have that basic distinction.
So like in the iPod's case, there's a million MP3 players by different manufacturers, so that somebody holds that patent?
Well, an MP3 player now starts to sound like the way the thing works and what
right.
it does rather than the way it looks and feels.
Right.
If you think about something like the, and I'm not being paid by Volkswagen, if you think about the Volkswagen Beetle, you look at the profile, it's very identifiable. So something that has an identifiable design, the way it looks rather than the way it works, that's a design patent. But on the way that it works and how it does what it does, how it functions, that's a utility patent.
So when you talk about, like, knockoffs of a product, like, I mean, everybody that's listening has probably heard of that silly Snuggie thing that you see on TV, and now Snuggie for the dog. And we all laugh about it, but people own them, and I know, you know, my mom probably buys a dozen a year for Christmas gifts. But with that in mind, so would they have a design patent on that? Like, so somebody else came out with, instead of the Snuggie, the warm blanket or whatever, the blanket with sleeves, it looks like a monk robe, somebody came up with something and called it something different. If the design of that How much does it have to be changed, I guess, is my,
okay,
my question
that's
for
a,
you.
That's a good question. There are three basic requirements, according to the United States patent statutes, for the obtaining of a patent. It has to be useful. It has to be novel, meaning new, and it also has to be non-obvious. So I think your question gets at we won't pass judgment on whether the Snuggie is useful. But supposing a person – I'll simplify and say supposing you're the first person to invent a bouncy rubber ball. The next person comes along and just makes it a different color. So the question is that obvious or is it useful? In these kinds of cases, of course, there's a lot of exchange between a patent applicant and the patent examiner at the patent office with regard to what constitutes something novel and then what is obvious or not obvious.
Mm-hmm.
So without passing judgment on the Snuggie, I would say if they were able to get a patent on this on a red Snuggie, I'm guessing that a blue Snuggie would be obvious and there
Got
would
it.
Not be patentable.
But
so.
What about, well, a Snuggie with a hood?
Well, it might be, right? Mm-hmm. But these are all, you know, these are all speculative kinds of judgments. You know, if I can show you a jacket with a hood, you know, does that render the addition of a hood
right or
obvious?
Short sleeves
sure.
or long
sure.
sleeves?
Sure.
Right. Like then
right.
you start
right.
It sounds like that's when you need someone like
yeah.
Need
an
Ted. Yeah, absolutely.
So then your job would be to talk to the examiner and the government to kind of negotiate this?
Yes, as part of what I do as a patent agent. First, of course, you know, maybe I could say a few words about the process that I think you should go through before even engaging someone like myself to write up a patent application, which is a complicated legal document. You should endeavor to do some searching on your own, find things that are even remotely like it. And you know, I know sometimes inventors they're so enthusiastic about their own idea. Sometimes you'll hear them say, oh, no, there's nothing like it, or, well, there might not be anything specifically like it in your application area. But, you know, as is the case with many electronic things, which is where some of my expertise lies, you'll find that in one industry, a solution to a problem has an analogous solution in another industry. So it's important to do that searching. And then beyond that, what you have, if you decide that based on that search that you have, you do have something unique, something novel,
mm-hmm.
and it's useful, and it's not an obvious departure from something that already exists, then it might make sense for you to pursue a patent application. Patent application has, you know, there are a lot of legal requirements, but this the patent application and the claims that get granted from that are what give you your legal standing to protect your idea. And so as part of the process of first writing the application, someone like myself or a patent agent or a solo inventor can do this themselves. The U.S. Mm-hmm. Patent Office allows individuals to pursue their own patents. As part of that, you would write up your specification, add the figures that you need and the drawings, and write the claims, and then it gets submitted. And on the day that it's submitted, if you've got sufficient detail there, you'll actually get a date from the patent office, and that's called your priority date, and dates are important. The difference between Alexander Graham Bell getting the patent for the telephone and Elijah Gray, I understand, was a matter of hours.
Wow, really?
Yeah. So to Lee's question then, once the application is submitted, there is this give and take between either the inventor or patent attorney or patent agent such as myself and the examiner. And the examiner is someone who is skilled in a fairly narrow set of art. So if you've invented a doorknob, chances are the examiner is going to be the person who looks at doorknobs.
Mm-hmm.
So they will have a fairly deep knowledge of that that narrow branch of art,
mm-hmm.
and they may come back with objections and rejections and things like that. And then there's this sort of this negotiation
that
happens.
That's where you're involved, right?
Yes, exactly. And so my job is to convince the examiner that this is novel and it's not obvious.
Okay.
It's not an obvious extension of what was already there. And if you can do that, then you'll get your patent claims granted.
But that's common, though, to have some give and take. It's not something where you just submit a sheet of paper and then they say you're in and here's the patent number.
I am not personally aware of a single instance where a patent was just granted the first time around.
Wow.
So, yes, there is extensive give and take.
And so that's why it's important to have somebody to help you.
Absolutely, to have a patent agent. How long does this process take? Is it days, months, years? I mean, how long typically? I know it probably depends on the product.
Yeah, that's another good question. You know, depending on the workload of the agent or attorney, you know, it can take several months to get a patent application written together. But once it's submitted, I think maybe that's maybe more to the point of your question. Different areas of art have a different length of backlog at the USPTO. And so in some areas of art, things proceed fairly rapidly, and fairly rapidly would be maybe from start to finish a 2 to 3 year window. Unfortunately, some areas of art have a fairly long backlog between the time that your application is submitted and the time that you can expect to have resolution of your case before the PTO. So it can stretch out 5-7 years. It's not unheard of.
That's a long time.
It could be obsolete.
Well,
but the day that you get official notice from the PTO that your application has received a priority date, you can say patent pending.
Okay, gotcha. That was my next
question.
And that
gives you some protection.
Yes, it does.
What's the difference between a patent and a trademark on something?
Well, I'm not an attorney, and patent agents don't practice trademark law, so there's one difference. But that's more of it is a patent and trademark office. And I myself have often wondered, you know, why there's the distinction for agents. But it's a legal distinction.
Okay.
And so a patent attorney would be able to handle that for you if you have that question.
So if you don't do it right, someone could really lose everything they have. If an inventor doesn't go the right way or the legal way, I mean, and they're infringing on someone else's ideas, you could really lose a lot of money, I would think.
There are a lot of cases where inventors' rights have not been preserved due to any number of reasons. In the United States, you know, one thing that bears mentioning is the kinds of things that inventors do that they may be unaware of that affect their rights later on to obtain a patent. In the United States, we have a fairly nice system in that you have 1 year from the date of certain activities that you might describe as, you know, sales or marketing. You have a year in which to, from the date that you first undertake that activity, to apply for a patent. That's in the United States. And the thinking there is that it gives you an opportunity to test your idea to see if it's really economically viable. And, of course, you know, most people who have these kinds of ideas and want to pursue patents, their objective is not necessarily just to join the Inventors Club. It's to make something of their idea, something economic that accrues to them. So so it's important to understand what kinds of activities sort of start this clock running.
Sure.
And in addition, I would say the following thing. You have to understand that in most of the rest of the world, they do not have this grace period. So if I have a great idea as I'm walking out of the studio and I try to sell it tomorrow, well, tomorrow is too late for me to apply for patent protection in a lot of the rest of the world. If I disclose my idea, if I divulge my idea, the rest of the world doesn't really have the kind of view of this one-year grace period for getting your idea rolling that we do in the U.S. So the U.S. system is nice, but it's important to understand what kinds of activity you should refrain from until you know what you want to do with regard to a patent.
Your website is terrific. It actually has some inventor do's and don'ts on it and how to protect your ideas, just some really interesting information. Would you mind giving your website out for folks and also let them know how they can contact you?
Sure, I'd love to. I'm at www.heskeinc. I'll spell that for you. It's H-E-S-K-E-I-N-C.com. And additionally, you can call me. I think it's really important to respond rapidly to people. I value other people's time. I hope that people value my time as well. And so you can call me if you need to discuss some ideas that you have and how you might be able to move them along. My phone number is 770-329-2586.
Excellent. And with 25 years plus of engineering experience, I imagine you can probably help someone with the engineering of their product as
Absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely. I love to do that. I'm a born problem solver, and usually I would say the harder the problem, the more I'm interested in working on it. Yeah, so I still do a tremendous amount of engineering, and the patent agency is something that I've added more recently because there's a real I'll use the word synergy between the engineering and what small businesses and individual inventors get involved with. It's a good mm-hmm. nexus of skills to have.
Absolutely, a great combination. Thanks so much for being with us today, Ted. We hope folks will reach out and check out your services if they have an idea or if this sparked their interest. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
You know, Lee, you talk about the engineering component. My brother, growing up, had a Rubik's Cube right when it came out.
He invented the Rubik's Cube.
No, he didn't invent it. He had one and drove himself absolutely insane for at least 6 years trying to solve that thing.
Uh-huh. Six years.
For like 6 years. I mean,
six years.
Our family vacations, yes. I mean, he didn't do it nonstop, but he's constantly fiddling with the thing and could never solve it.
Right.
Cole now can solve the Rubik's Cube, and he loves people to come over and mix it up as much as possible. And
wow.
Now he kind of, he's getting a little cocky. He can kind of do it with his eyes shut because he knows the turns. And
right.
It's like, what's up with that? And
kids are smarter now.
Kids are
smarter. That's the lesson.
But the internet too. It's all a matter of algorithms, I found out. And
uh-huh.
if you're math minded and like Ted was saying, he likes to solve problems, the
right.
engineer mind. But he's 12 and solves a Rubik's Cube, and my brother drove himself crazy for years.
So does your brother now?
He does. We actually, we made a little
YouTube
flip
video.
We did. We made a flip right. video and sent it to him, and he actually got a big kick out of it in his 40s and still can't solve the Rubik's Cube. But yeah, it is. It's a mindset. And
yeah.
I would think the combination of an engineering mindset along with the patent agent would be very beneficial. Well, I'm so excited this morning. We have with us someone that actually has an invention, two of them, and maybe even more I don't know about, that you can see in the stores. Very soon you'll see it on QVC. I'm so excited about having the president and the inventor of Lips and Eyes and her wonderful husband, which I think is probably the backbone and a lot of support for her, Howard and Kermetta McGarity. Welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show.
Thank you, Amy.
So we've been sitting here listening to folks talk about inventions, and people think that you can do it overnight, and now we find out it doesn't happen overnight.
Maybe it does. Did it happen overnight for you, Kermetta?
Actually, no. We started this process in 2005.
Well, that's not
so,
that's still
it's
not
only
too
like
bad.
1,000 overnights, right?
Tell us about your product and how it came about.
Well, I was putting my makeup on one morning and digging through the makeup bag. I can't see that well. I wasn't wearing glasses back then. I took a lip liner and lined my eyes with it.
Oh, I've done just the opposite. That's
yeah,
not a good
I know,
thing.
I know. And so I'm allergic to red dye, and that made my eyes bleed. I told Howard, you've got to help me here. I sketched something out quickly, and I said, can you make this thing for me? He said, sure, I think I can. So he took duct tape, cardboard, and styrofoam, and he made my Lips and Eyes sketch, which I used for 3 months, and then made it out of acrylic. So
initially it was just styrofoam?
Styrofoam and duct tape and cardboard.
It looks a lot nicer now.
Well, it was originally meant just for my use, and I loved it so much, all my family wanted one. So we decided to pursue the process of trying to bring it to market.
Did it have a clock in the original version of this?
Yes, it did, because I kept running out of the bathroom looking to see what time it was. And I thought, okay, we'll just stick a clock in it. So we ordered the clocks actually from China, and that took months to get. Howard can tell you about that. We actually sent a hole to China so they could fit the clock in
into the hole.
Into the hole. That was the only way we could get it right. So.
Right.
So Howard, how did you send the hole? Was it on a piece of cardboard, acrylic? I mean, you send them a hole and say, fit a clock in this?
Well, we were having, you always have problems when you deal with China, not in that they're not responsive, because they are incredibly responsive and conduct extremely good business. But there's a communication issue, mm-hmm. and the size of the hole and the diameter of the clock is absolutely critical. And you're going to ship 10,000 clocks to the United States, so they need to be right.
Right.
And so, you know, I had a feeling that there might be some doubt as to what the diameter of the clock ought to be. And so I sent them a hole. And by that time, we actually had a prototype product. And so I took a pair of shears and I cut the hole out of the actual product and packaged it up and sent it to them. And they put, as they said, they put a crock in it and sent it back for our approval. And we said, A-OK, you know, ship the clocks.
So the clocks slide in and out of there?
The clock, you can remove the clock in order to change the battery and set it and everything.
Or hide something valuable behind it, Lee. Can you imagine? You put your expensive diamond rings back there when the cleaning lady comes to your house, right? Or, unless she steals the whole thing.
Or spare change you like to, you know, a little stash you want to keep private for your husband or something like that.
Oh, yeah, so it's got a secret little compartment back there. Or if you didn't want the clock, you could remove it and put, you know, just have extra space, I would imagine. Can you tell him?
I see you've thought this through.
I am. I'm looking at it in front of me, and I'm thinking.
We'll have to ask Ted if that you can have your own patent on that without the clock.
No. It looks perfect just the way it is.
I think it needs the clock.
I like the clock.
I think
I really
that was
do.
A critical element.
I do. It definitely makes it look good, too. So start us out. You come up with the idea. I mean, did you think about it for months, weeks? How long did it take before you really acted on it? It sounds like Howard, being the good husband that he is.
He jumped on it right away.
Jumped on it right away and made it for you. But then, I mean, did over the course of how long did you then say, okay, this is a really good idea. People are wanting it. I got to do something with it.
Cremetta could answer that, but it was a gradual process over a number of months. Like Cremetta said, she actually used the cardboard one for 3 months, and it really worked well. And so we said, we need to make this a little more pretty. So we went to a specialty plastic manufacturer, and they hand-built a model out of, a clear acrylic.
But go back a little bit to the, okay, you were using it, and there was no intention to, hey, we can sell this, right? Your initial thing was just to clean up your area that you do your makeup, right?
Totally.
That was it.
Yes.
So then what was the thing that got you to where, did someone see it in your room? Like, how did it move beyond, hey, this is good for me, but maybe it'll be good for other people?
Well, actually, I took the acrylic one to Thanksgiving to my mother's house, and I showed it to all my sister-in-laws and my entire family. There's like 40 of us. And everybody said, well, I want one of those. Well, we'll see if we can get one for you. So we went to the plastic manufacturer, and to hand make it was going to be like $25.
Right.
So I didn't want to spend that kind of money for them. So
Nothing personal.
So, we just started pursuing the manufacturing of it, and what a long road that was. And we made an incredible lot of mistakes.
Sure. But were you in this business before? Had you invented other things? Like,
no.
What's your background?
I was dry cleaning business.
Dry cleaning
for
business?
For 25 years.
So this is a logical next step, right?
No. And I was thinking I probably could have invented some things for the dry cleaning industry, but back then I really was not, I didn't have an inventor mind.
Right.
I had to retire first and have nothing to do and sit around and say, oh, this is great.
Solve some problems.
Yes.
How about you, Howard? You obviously have a business background. When I sent an email out to you asking for a little bit of information, and you sent me what I think is one of the most incredible business plans I've ever seen about your product, you know, talking about the history and the market and the need for it and the production and the inventory. I was so impressed. Where does that come from?
Well, that's interesting. My degree is biology. I ended up not doing anything but that. I ended up in commercial photography, which is quite different. And you do bring up a good point because, and we were discussing before this the show, where a passion meets the need for business in order to support the passion. Mm-hmm. And there's a real problem in this area. And it was evident in photography, all these wannabe photographers, but they didn't want to do business. Mm. So my business background is something that has been self-taught out of a need to survive.
Wow.
And thank goodness I pulled it off. Otherwise, I wouldn't be here today. And incidentally, the business plan I sent you, that was just because I got a last-minute request to give you a bio and information. I was leaving the office and was going to be out till late in the evening, and I didn't have time to do that, so I just sent you a business plan.
Well, you know it piqued my interest. I don't normally read 13 pages of anything that comes across my desk here. It's usually I just glance at something, but I got really interested in just the development of it. And I mean, I would, just the advantages. I mean, you talk about its uniqueness. It was very well thought out. So I appreciated you sharing it with me. On that note, there's a lot of money involved in this. I know you. Was it scary? I mean, what did you do when you had to come up with money to start the concept?
Well, of course, in hindsight, I now would have a different approach to the entire process. We were somewhat judicious in doling the money out. Fortunately, we had sold a business. We had been in business for many years, so we did have some funds. And actually, it wasn't really till the very end of the process we had to apply for business loan. And that was the reason for that business plan you have there. Mm-hmm. That was to secure a loan. The most important thing for inventors to understand when they're going into this process is you're going to have to need to find some source somewhere, be it out of your own pocket, your family's pocket, an investor's pocket. You're going to have to come up with funds to make this project that you have fly.
Right.
Another thing, add 50% to the figure that you come up with initially. It's going to take more money. And if the money dries up, the whole process just dies right in its tracks.
Wow.
What was that like going into that kind of a risk world where, you know, because there's no guarantees in this. It's a great idea. People loved it. But, you know, there's no guarantee that this is going to be a mass market product.
Well, fortunately, both Cometa and I have been in business for ourselves for many years. Mm-hmm. I since 1983. I haven't had a job since 1983. Cometa hasn't had a job since about 1975, I forget. So
the risk part was less.
You do have a higher tolerance for risk when you come out of that background. Mm-hmm. Because between the two of us, we've actually been through two or three startups. This process happened gradually, and I think that's important because we almost didn't really pay attention to the degree of risk we were getting into. Mm-hmm. And I think that can very easily happen with other inventors who are so enthusiastic about their idea. They're just into it. They're shelling out money, they're getting loans, they're borrowing something from their parents.
Right.
And the next minute they're in it before they realize exactly the position they put themselves in. Bottom line is don't quit your day job. As with any business, cash flow is absolutely essential.
Sure. Right.
And if your product isn't to market yet, you have no cash flow from your product. It's going to have to come from somewhere else.
Your product was picked up, though, by great spots. I mean, is it Solutions Magazine? I love that magazine. And tell us a little bit about QVC.
QVC, that's an interesting bird. Of course, everybody knows QVC. And from an inventor's point of view, what QVC is more a promotional tool than a money-making tool.
Okay.
QVC will automatically drive their purchase price of your product down to rock bottom.
Hmm.
So your profit is going to be pretty slim.
Okay.
The exposure is fantastic.
Absolutely.
And people.
And you make it up in volume?
Their volume is pretty good. Hmm. And as a matter of fact, if your product really sells, yeah, the volume will go way up. But it's on a guaranteed basis. You ship to them. If they don't sell it, they ship it back to you. They don't buy your product from you in order to sell.
So it's like consignment?
It's essentially a consignment type of situation.
So how many do they make you send them?
Our initial purchase order is for 2,500 pieces.
Okay.
And that would be a trial. And after that point, depending on your number of sales per minute, it could go way, way, way up. It could be truly enormous.
So they're actually looking at sales per minute? That's the metric they use to determine if something's successful?
Well, they have only one thing. They have airtime.
That's right. And people sitting by their phone. My mom's addicted. She's got it on speed dial.
What's a good sales per minute number they look for?
I haven't got that far in the process yet. They don't divulge all that.
Mm-hmm.
But to go on a little further with QVC, we actually secured a purchase order number from QVC. We got the passwords and everything to go behind the scenes to your little part on their website where you track your orders and the sales and all that business. But then we never actually got the ship date. And we wait, then we inquire. A new buyer had come in. The economic downturn actually has hurt QVC as well.
Sure.
They reset their strategies, our product is relatively inexpensive. It's priced sell for about $19.95. They would probably, in order to maximize their sales per minute, would rather have a product that would sell for $59.95 for three easy monthly payments of $19.95.
Oh, right.
They just tripled their return per minute. So we've been put on temporary hold.
Okay.
For an indefinite period.
Wow.
It's hard to plan around that.
Another really good lesson here. If you go into the invention business, be prepared to face any number of surprises, setbacks, heartbreaks. It can be, it can kill you. Because, I mean, if you're an inventor, the holy grail is to go to QVC if you're in a consumer product.
Sure.
And here it is dangled, the carrots right hanging right there in front of your nose after 3 years of hammering away, and then it's snatched away at the last minute.
It'll be back, though. It will be back.
However, if it's not, we've moved beyond QVC.
You've moved beyond QVC. Not only that, but you've moved on to other products. Since we have a short period of time, I do want to – the Lips and Eyes is awesome. I think it's a really neat product. I absolutely see the need for it, and I would buy it. I will buy it.
Thank you.
The other product y'all sent me, I mean, it made me laugh, but at the same time, I was like, I could have used this when I was pregnant. So now that our listeners are wondering, what in the world could you use when you're pregnant, tell us about your other invention.
I think I'll let Cremetta answer that question.
we're looking at the invention right now.
I'll say one thing. When she brought it up, I said, oh, no, man, I just can't get involved with this sort of product.
Okay, and go ahead. It's a big mouth barf bag.
Well, that was what we put on it to get attention. Actually, my daughter had a sick child for quite a while, and she said, Mom, I am so tired of cleaning out this bucket.
Oh.
So I said, oh, well, hey, I have an idea. Let me work on it. So here's what it became, a barf bag. And we really weren't sure if we should use the word barf because, you know, it just sounds yuck.
You know what it is.
But it says exactly what it is. So it's it folds up. It fits in your shirt pocket, purse, car, anywhere. It's instant. It pops open.
It's a single-use product, though, right?
Single-use. You don't have to fold it back up. Biodegradable.
The best part is that it's got a drawstring, Lee. Do you see that?
Yeah,
the drawstring? My daughter gets car sick.
And it's pink. That's good. It's fashionable.
Nothing like driving through Yosemite and my daughter gets car sick every twist and turn. And
I don't want to know. I don't want to know. I really don't want to know.
That's perfect. Look at that.
Leak proof, odor proof.
Wow.
Yeah, there you have it.
That is good stuff. Now, how was the manufacturing process for that? Was that more difficult?
We are still in the manufacturing process.
Oh, so you're still battling that?
Still battling that, but...
looks like it's working pretty good.
Working pretty good. This one you're looking at was handmade.
What generation is that? How many little renditions have you gone through so far?
Actually, this is the only one.
Oh, so one...
Primitive early versions.
Mm-hmm. Right.
First time out, it looks like we got it right, so...
Well, wow, good stuff.
You couldn't really test it by using it and reusing it, but that is, I mean, what a great idea. I could see those at the checkout at the maternity shop. You mentioned even for, like, chemotherapy patients.
Right, cancer hospitals.
Yeah, absolutely.
Part of their goodie bag.
Absolutely, and their little kit they get, you know, you've got to feel good. You've got to maintain your dignity. So with this, you've always got a place to be sick.
Right, and then Howard and I were talking about colleges. Fraternity houses, licensing.
You don't even want to know his idea.
We're not going to go there. We like to keep it positive, right?
Let's keep it serious.
Wow, we can't wait to catch up with you in a few months too, and see where you're going with the big mouth barf bag. And also, if folks are interested in purchasing the Lips and Eyes, you can do that from your website, or can you let folks know?
We used to sell on the website, and we chose not to compete with our retailers, mm-hmm. so we've taken it off the website. However, we have a retailer's page that has links to the various catalogs that stock that item.
And that's on your website, then?
And that's on the website.
Give that again.
That website is www.lips, the hyphen, and the letter N, hyphen, eyes, EYES, lipsandeyes.com.
check it out. It would make a great holiday gift for that person that has everything. And, you know, if you were a really good husband, Lee, you could give that to Abby and you could hide a little something behind the clock.
Wow.
Yeah,
if
right?
I was a good husband.
Well, gee. Thanks so much for being with us today and for sharing your experience with us. Gosh, what an incredible journey. We can't wait to catch up with you in a few months and see how it's going. I'll look for you on QVC. It's going to happen.
Thank you.
It will happen. Well, if you're listening now and you're thinking, gosh, I've got these great ideas and it seems like I'd have to quit my day job in order to pursue
it. Right, I'm overwhelmed.
Right, it can be overwhelming. But we are wrapping up the show today with someone that can help. From Invent Help today, we have Eileen. And Eileen, Invent Help is kind of like, I would like to say, it's like a go-to if you have this idea, but you can't quit your daytime job. Tell us about Invent Help.
Well, Invent Help's been in business since 1984, and what we do is we help inventors obtain their patents, and with that, we do work with independent patent attorneys, and we also help you get in front of manufacturers. With that, we have a databank of over 10,000 manufacturers that are under a confidentiality agreement with us to help you get your idea out there, and that's one of our biggest things. Invent Help has over 70 offices worldwide. And I'm sure you guys have all seen our commercial or seen us online with the caveman and the wheel.
Right.
That's us. And we also sponsor the largest invention trade show in the United States. It's called INPEX. It's held every year in Pittsburgh. That's where our company is based out of. And we're actually having our 25th anniversary show next June. So we are really excited about that.
Now, I love listening to Ted and hearing about the things that he brings to the table and Dave, and people just take different approaches. It almost seems like Invent Help might be the approach that someone would take if they don't have a lot of time, they don't have a business plan, they just want to see, is this viable or is it not? What kind of investment is someone looking at just to present their idea and see if they want to go to the next step?
Well, it does require money. Our services are fee-based. But it's all dependent on what your idea is and what you need for it. So, and there's plenty of different programs that we do offer. The best thing to do is to definitely give us a call and come meet with our director. And he will go over everything with you in detail and explain it because it's all on case-by-case basis.
Okay.
So, well, when you said fee-based, what are there other ways of doing it? Some other companies do something other than fee-based?
No, but a lot of people will call us and, you know, either they don't have a lot of money or they're looking for somebody to do it for free for them. But, you know, it does require money. Like talking to, you know, our inventors here today, they require a large investment from you. So, you know, it's just we have ways to help you out financially, though.
So it might be a good step for someone. Do you ever tell someone this idea is not going to work? I mean, do you ever, are you realistic in those terms? Do you ever look at something and say, well, gosh, this already exists? Or do you help refine someone's expectations?
Well, we can't evaluate your idea because, again, we're not the manufacturers. We don't know what they're going to say. But if something is really beyond the scope of what our company can work with, like we don't work with business plans or trademark issues. We deal with something that's a product that you could actually touch and feel. Unless it's something that's really off the wall and maybe the technology will never exist till the year till 4000. So, but other than that, I mean,
so you won't help me with my flying saucer?
Like the balloon boy?
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
So, but is there, you can't really tell if something's going to work or not. I mean, the Snuggie proves that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
sure. Yeah.
Like, how do you know?
Yeah, we're not the manufacturer. Invent Help isn't, so we don't know what they're going to say. So, but our goal is to just get you in front of those companies and get you as much exposure as possible.
So you get a swing at the bat.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So you actually help create prototypes or design? I mean, how? I know your job in particular involves some video. Tell us what you do.
Yeah, well, I'm the office manager at my office, and I'm also the creative director. We do different things to make everything very personal with what we do for our inventors, and we do, you know, take pictures of them and use it in their materials, and I do shoot videos. It just helps as much information as we could possibly get. You know, the better results we're going to get, hopefully. So that's the fun part of my job. And I also graduated from Savannah College of Art and Design. So with my art background, I handle all the details with my clients and make sure, you know, their drawings are as clear as possible and everything in their description is clear as possible.
Can you share maybe a success story that you've been working on?
A lot of our clients right now, they're not patented, so I can't really talk about that. It's all confidential. But some of the biggest things that have come out of our company are the weed thrasher. That was on QVC. It was an attachment for a weed whacker, so you don't have to constantly be hitting your weed whacker against the ground to change the threads and all this stuff, and they get stuck and they won't tangle up. We recently had a pancake cutter, which was on Rachel Ray. It's like a stamp that you put on your pancakes, and it cuts the pancakes in little slices.
Oh, cool.
I don't know if you guys have ever noticed these in the stores like Walmart and Walgreens and everything during the holidays. They'll have lollipops. They're on spinners.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's came out of our company also.
Wow.
So
the lollipop spinner.
See? Yeah, lollipop spinner.
You never know where the next big idea is.
You never know. But if you're interested in finding out more about InventHelp, can you give us the website, Eileen?
Yes. It's www.inventhelp.com. It's InventHelp.com.
And I understand a consultation is free.
Yes. Yes, the meetings are free. Just come in and speak with us. We do everything confidentially. We will, before you disclose your idea to us, we will sign a statement of confidentiality with you to protect you first.
Mm-hmm. Great. Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful resources for the inventive mind here.
Yeah.
So if you're listening and you have that invention in the back of your head, you have no reason now not to take action, right?
That's it.
No better time than the present. Attend an InventHelp or an Inventors Association meeting.
That's monthly.
That's monthly, exactly. Gosh, absolutely call Ted Heskey, who's a patent agent and an electrical engineer. And if you want to know what it's really like to go through all the ups and downs of an invention, you may want to ask Kermetta or Howard because, wow, they've been there. They've done it successfully. And I can't wait to see the wonderful things that come out of their company as well. Lee, we've run out of time, out of time today. Until the inventors are on again, we hope that folks will listen to the Atlanta Business Radio Show. We have wonderful guests every week. And until next week, this is Amy Otto with the Atlanta Business Radio Show.